This is Jake Lloyd from Star Wars Episode 1. I played young Anakin Skywalker. We be geeks, yo!
You're listening to a We Be Geeks Network podcast.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power.
Mission commencing.
My name is Optimus Prime.
All wings, check in.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Red Button standing by.
Red Fox standing by.
Big Red standing by.
Red October standing by.
Helen Reddy standing by.
Simply Red standing by.
Hey, Scott!
So, the bad crowd you've been hanging out with is a science fiction club?
Meanwhile, in a small corner of the city, in the home of real bad pain...
You wanted the best, and you're still stuck with us.
I was going to say, now you get the rest.
Now you get us. It is episode 74 of We Be Geeks. It's, what, 22 episodes with McFly and the Ogre?
Not a bad combo.
We need to find someone to do some sort of zinger. McFly and the Ogre.
Be like, was it when Brian and Stewie did it Family Guy?
We'll have to ask Al John if he could do that or maybe have Kristen do that for us. McFly and the Ogre.
I don't know. I always add the morning. I must be my community fandom coming out because I always want to do the Troy and Abed in the morning jingle when we try to do it. So I'm sad, you know. Community got canceled.
Oh,
that was a show that really hurt. I don't know if you had a show that got canceled that, you know, since the last time we talked, but that one hurt. I'm a huge Community fan.
You know, there really wasn't anything.
Really?
Most of the shows that I was...
Revolution, maybe?
Nah.
No?
I'm happy to see that one go.
I was surprised. I thought that had a pretty good fan following, so...
It did. Apparently, there's been a online petition. They're trying to Family Guy it, or... But I think it's going more Firefly direction. Right. Of course, S.H.I.E.L.D. got renewed. The Agent Carter series got picked up. I don't know if it's 8 or 13 episodes, though. I've heard both. Haley Atwell has said 8, but I've read reports 13. So, but for that Marvel news, and of course, the news that just came out about Ant-Man and
Grey.
And Daredevil.
Daredevil. A lot of movie and TV news lately. I know the upfronts were just happening, so of course we're getting TV, but movies have been popping with the news here lately too.
Yeah, but for the Marvel news, from this week, go check out Mighty Marvel Geeks. It's another show on the network, that I do with original Weeby Geeks co-host Ken. If any of you listeners remember Ken, he and I now run the Marvel show. He's on vacation at the moment, so last week and this week's all me. I'll be talking about Ant-Man and the Daredevil stuff and other interesting news.
Yeah.
So, other than that, Arrow's back. Flash is coming. Gotham's coming. Oh my God, what a trailer.
Constantine, I'm actually excited for that after I saw the trailer.
I have not seen the trailer for Constantine.
You need to check out the We Be Geeks Facebook page then, because I posted it up on there. So
I think you posted it up while I was on vacation.
Oh, what is that? Vacation just means you get more time to check Facebook. That's all vacation means.
You haven't vacationed with my family, visiting family in Louisiana. Oh my Lord.
Oh yeah, they don't have the internet in Louisiana. I forgot about that.
Oh, they do. Problem I was running into is we didn't have
electricity. That's what it is.
Going to Louisiana is like going to Disney. I need 2 weeks to see everyone and everything that I need to see when we're home in Louisiana. And we were only
to come say hey.
Yeah.
But you look well rested, so I'm glad the vacation did you well.
Well, of course, last week we had Jake Lloyd on the show, which was awesome. Great guy. Because of that show, restraining order got lifted.
Oh, did it? Oh, man. That's surprising. I didn't expect that move. I thought he was going to say Titan. Like, he went from like 50 feet to now, you know, 100 feet or something like that. So you had to stay away.
No. I think it got lifted until I sent him a link to that one mask painter who did the mural for the room of his movie. I think it came back on that where
No, we're going back to the restraining. Yeah.
I cannot even enter the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
Not even land in the airport.
Besides Indianapolis, there isn't a whole lot of Indiana to see unless you're a big fan of corn. I drive through Indiana. I've got family in Michigan, so I drive through Indiana like a lot. And
I'm not a big fan of the group Corn.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait. You're talking corn other
in
corn.
Corn in corn.
You're talking about children in the corn?
Could
children
be.
Of the corn.
I actually always make the joke because, you know, it's a long stretch of interstate, very boring, and there's not much to do. And a lot of truck drivers do drive through there. And truck drivers do apparently also like to stop and frequent porn stores that typically happen to be in cornfields. So I always say it's the corn in the corn stop because there's a bunch of those along the way.
Sounds like that is the Florida panhandle of the Midwest.
There you go.
Oh, my Lord. Florida Panhandle.
That's the backbone of America.
It for me to leave the state driving, if I'm going west, it takes me 7 hours.
Ugh.
It's 3 hours, about 2 hours to get north, 5 hours to go west.
I didn't think that state was that wide to go 5 hours.
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, my Lord, yes. And if you do it at like early morning or you hit it on the way home at night, the only lights on the high on I-10 is as you get close to a city.
Nice.
And it's like, no, it's not. Because everything's
at least,
black.
As long as you
like,
don't hear banjo music, you're okay.
Well, sure. But I cross the Suwannee River, so I hear
a stupid song in your head.
Yes. So, I guess before we get any further, we're actually going to be playing the second half of that Nelson Ferro De Castro show, which we cover more of his music side.
Yeah.
But we're going to do that, go into that right after we do, our dork. God, no. I'm a dork. I'm a geek and a dork. After we do our Dark Horse pick of the week for June 4th, which is right. Next week. So I guess we could go right into that.
Do we have theme music? Is that what you're looking for?
I'm going to do this. Comic shop, comic shop. Everybody go to the
comic shop. Comic shop, comic shop. Yeah, that works. Yeah, so I guess it's my turn to pick this week. I went with Angel in Faith Season 10, Number 3. That was
okay.
My pick of the week. There was next week there's about six Dark Horse books coming out, and that was the one that tickled my fancy, mostly because I am a longtime Buffy fan. So, I don't know, are you a Buffy fan at all, Mike?
No, but I enjoyed watching Seth on the show when he was on. Seth Green, which, fellow youth grouper.
Right. Yeah, he was on there for a good couple seasons there, so yeah. That was a...
I guess I got to find out from Todd if this is the show he's going to be working on, but Team Unicorn's getting a show.
That's
being
really?
Put on by Seth and Matt Sinrich. So I wonder if Todd's involved on that show.
It is very possible.
So, anyhow, Angel Season 10.
Yeah, so you're not really into the lore of everything that is Buffy. You know, it had seven seasons on TV, for those that may not know. And then many years passed and they decided to kind of resurrect it for the comics for Dark Horse. Gave it a season 8. So basically the stories are continuing straight along from the TV show. So season 8, at the end of season 8, Buffy, through the fight that was caused with the big bad and that one, I won't ruin any spoilers there, but basically Buffy cut off the world from their magical connection. Magic was gone in the world, and it was all the fault of Buffy. So she got a lot of the blame, and she's also trying to figure out how to bring it back. So that's what basically season 9 was trying to bring that connection back from magic. And and then also during that time, Angel and Faith, who had their own separate series, they resurrected Rupert Giles, who actually was killed in season 8. So that's your one spoiler. Rupert okay. Giles, he's the Watcher. The old guy with the glasses, and was, you know, kind of Buffy's mentor. He got killed in season 8. So Angel and Faith figure out a way to bring him back, although he is, sort of like a 13-year-old body. you know, kind of like a preteen body. He's not the old stodgy man. He's kind of fully being brought back. But what happened during that time, they brought back Vidal's. They saved the world from a magical virus. And the only problem was that doing so, they sacrificed a corner of London. And it kind of was like this magic boom. And now, like, everything in that corner has been affected by magic, good or bad. And it's been kind of been dubbed as, like, Magic Town. And so it's now... Yeah, basically. It's like, oh, well, we got some magic back, but we gotta, well, yeah, sorry. We're doing our best we can. So now what it is Angel and Faith are now seeing what happens with magic having returned, and, Faith is actually just trying to figure out what she wants to do now, because she kind of feels lost. So she's going back to America to join the organization called Deep Scan. It's kind of like think of it as like bodyguards with a little magical twist.
Okay.
And yeah, so they're like, you know, they're hiring slayers, and they know that they're slayers because they need them for special little missions. So it's not like a government ops or anything like that, but it's essentially like a security guards.
Gotcha.
or bodyguards, things like that. So, you know, she's first day on the job, and she kind of screws up. So you have to read issue 3 to see how she screws up. Then, meanwhile, Angel, who's on the track of some more magically connected creatures, one of which is like this little gangster that's also about the size of he's a pixie, but he's like a gangster, gangster pixie. And he has a bunch of other pixies that are around, and they're kind of running the town and like bottling up magic and selling it to people with kind of weird results. So he's basically trying to stop it. So it's sort of like a magical drug deal that Angel's kind of trying to stop happening. But this little pixie keeps, he's the boss, and he keeps kind of, stopping Angel from stopping him.
Okay.
But you kind of feel like he's kind of like the middleman, you know, you're waiting to see like who's behind the little gangster pixie. But, yeah, so that's essentially, it's kind of the setup for Buffy and Angel number 3. If you're looking to get into season 10, it's only 3 issues behind, so next week the 3rd issue will be out, so you can easily catch up. I pretty much gave you the groundwork for where the series is now.
Right.
So you kind of can pretty much jump in and not be too lost. If you're a fan of the Buffy series or the Angel series, I think you'll dig it. There's some pretty cool moments in there. And, you know, we'll see how long season 10 goes. I think it seems like most of the previous seasons have been about, like, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40 issues for the actual season. So, you know, it's just starting. So get on the roller coaster while it's still on the bottom.
Very cool. And hey, they look great next to your complete DVD sets of 1 through 8.
They do. I do have those. I'm waiting. Like, I'm surprised they haven't come out with like the massive Blu-ray collection just to make me do the Star Wars move and make me rebuy my entire collection. But they haven't done that yet.
The more and more you say that, the more and more I look at the soundtracks done, I'm realizing, okay, I'm a little behind on the CDs.
Well, the thing that just popped in my head now is, you know, it's 2014 now, in about, what, 3 more years, I think, is actually going to be the 20th anniversary of Buffy. I want to say it debuted in 1997, if I remember right. So
the movie has already hit 20 years.
Yeah, the movie, I think, came out in 93 or 4, off the top of my head. So that's already passed. But, I mean, do we count the movie, do we?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, from what I had heard, the movie was what led into the TV series.
It is, and there are some loose
dialogue tiebacks
to the movie, like, you know, because Buffy moves to Sunnydale, and she's like saying, oh, I had some problems at a previous school, which is kind of a throwback to the movie itself, but it's not much reference. Actually, there may have been one character that popped up that was from there during the run of the TV show, but that's about it.
And the movie came out in 92.
92. Wow. So yeah, there you go. So I could see, like, you know, 20th anniversary, something special and shiny will probably happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
So we're only 3 more years from that. 97 is when, like you said, is when the series came out. So yeah. Just have to see.
Yeah.
One of Joss Whedon's more popular successes.
Yeah. I was one of those fans, like, it took me a while to get into Angel, like I think everybody else, but once I got into it, man, when that show was hitting its stride, it was hitting hard. It was good. And it was really almost like when Buffy ended and Angel was still going, it was also kind of like, this is my only connection I have to this world anymore. So it made the connection even stronger. So.
Right. Well, I know Melissa, my wife, you know, she watched it all the time. I mean, she was a diehard of it. I watched it off and on. And I watched a couple of the seasons that Seth Green was on. But yeah, I just didn't get into it, partially because of my work schedule. You know, I work evenings. So DVR, VCR room at the time was quite limited.
Right.
So
no, it's a great series. It's definitely a Joss kind of series. So if you get some time, I recommend it. And then start reading the comics, because the comics that Dark Horse has done, especially since Dark Horse got the rights back to Spike and Angel, because they used to be over at IDW. Since they've gotten those rights, and all the characters are under the same umbrella, it's been some solid stuff.
Hey,
kudos, Dark Horse.
Very much kudos to Dark Horse. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be going right into Nelson's interview.
It's some more good, funny stuff if you like part one.
It's great. And his band, was it Megadroid?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So check them out on Facebook. They got some pretty cool stuff up there, too.
And you hear me geek out on audio gear.
And you hear me go completely silent because I have no idea what the crap you were talking about.
I mean, when we're sitting there talking about the consoles and Pro Tools and the Focusrite and sorry, I had slipped.
Mm-hmm. No.
I went my other geek realm.
I was going to say, it's all geek, so it all counts.
So, yeah. It's like yesterday I had a training class at work. I'm getting a new lighting console for my stage. So, definitely. So, new toy to play with. And, I'm so excited about it. I can do so much more than what I've got with the console I'm using now. My stage is going to get that much more fun, likewise.
Nice.
So, I guess until next week, we hit that grand mark of 75 episodes, which, wow, are we going to hit 100 episodes before the end of this year?
If calculations are correct, I do believe we will.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
25 more to, well, 26.
Holy centennial, more Batman, is what you should be saying.
True. True. But no, I think first 75 episodes, we've had quite a few guests that have been definitely the quality. I won't say the quality of guests have been improving, because they've all been quality guests. It's just been fun times. So we'll have to see where we could get to. So we're going to release it back over to the second half of this interview that we did with Nelson, and I cannot find what I'm looking for. And until next time.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright.
I have something that might actually come back to you in a humorous way, if my memory serves me correctly. I was an attendee of Wizard World probably back 99-2000 era.
Which area?
It was a Chicago one. They hadn't started branching out yet, so yes. Chicago was it. And I want to say you hosted, like, the Wizard World Awards.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And I the only thing, for some reason, I'm trying to remember who you hosted it with, but I remembered your name popping up. And I'm pretty sure, like, a puppet Yoda came into play as well.
Yes. In fact, I still have the puppet.
Do you really? Oh, my gosh.
He has gotten up out of his chair to go get the Yoda.
I'm pretty sure, like, this is the time when I was really wanting to be in the filmmaking, so I carry, like, a video camera with me everywhere. So I actually, if I can find the tapes, I have it on, like, VHS-C. I have probably most of that on VHS-C somewhere, if I feel really inclined to dig it up and go looking for it. But it's like, yeah, it's Nelson and somebody else doing the Wizard World Awards.
I have a really bad feeling about this.
Yeah, they I think that was a year that they, you know, Alex Ross was just dominating the painters, and I think they officially just named it the Alex. There is the.
How are you, B?
There we go.
Oh. Hello, Geeks We Be. Will we? Yes.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
Oh, puppy. No. I kid you not, we got this, it was a bachelor party, Joe Quesada's bachelor party, I kid you not, with Dan Buckley.
What sort of comics can you have a Yoda puppet at a bachelor party?
We went to Vegas, and we went to the Star Trek experience, and it was Jimmy Palmiotti, Joe Quesada, Dan Buckley is now the president of Marvel, Mike Pesciullo, who does all the convention stuff, and Frank Thierry, if I remember correctly. And they sold this at the Star Trek experience. So I'm like, this has nothing to do with Star Trek. I'm buying this. And then I tormented people with this stupid Yoda puppet all day long. And then we went to the casino and got drunk. And I tormented people with this stupid puppet. Prostitutes at the bar, you name it. They got tormented with this stupid puppet. And then it ended up, I guess, we just brought it out whenever we wanted to bother people with a bad puppet. And it has some history, that one there. So
yeah,
I still have that.
I don't. Yeah, those. I go sell them. There's only two things I remember from that awards night. Was the Yoda puppet coming out, and I remember you guys just making the joke that the painter award just officially become the Alex Ross Award.
I think Joe Jusko said that he should call it the Alex Ross Award.
Yeah, because he's dominating. I guess still now, but he's the painter for everyone at that, because he had just gotten done with like Kingdom Come and Earth Ice at that time.
Exactly. The next year I did Godzilla, that movie with Matthew Broderick was out at the time. And I did Godzilla the Musical. I kid you not. My mother sewed this bit. I have it in the closet. Don't make me go put it on.
No.
It's in the same closet that I got the Yoda puppet. And it's this big, stuffed, with big stuffed feet. Green. I'll email you a photo of it.
Yes.
And she sewed it. My mother sewed this ridiculous. It was all stuffed and everything, and I had like a little thing with my face popping out and a tail. And I came out and stepped on some boxes that looked like buildings, and it sang the Godzilla. I made up my own Godzilla theme song from, I think it was from Phantom of the Opera. I took the music and then I sang. Pretty much like 2,000 people at the convention center. And I got a standing ovation, which was. And, you know, I have that on video somewhere.
Oh, nice.
One of these days I'm going to upload that to YouTube. It was that was a scene, man. That was
those were fun. I remember those con. That was like the first big con that I got to go to. I was just like fresh out of high school, and me and a buddy just, we lived in Nashville. We just drove to Chicago because we were big Wizard Magazine fans. And so if they're throwing a con, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. Those were good shows. Wizard, you know, another thing, when I first started out, again, I was pretty new to the biz, and I had met Garib Sheamus and, I knew his parents and stuff, too. They'd be at, like, some shows, and the Wizard magazine wasn't too far from New York here. It was upstate New York, not too far from where I grew up in this area of northern New Jersey. And they were such nice folks, and I got to meet Garib, and I remember he asked me to commission some paintings for me. And Wizard was, like, a hot thing at the time, so, like, I got very lucky that I was selling stuff while in school, and then, you know, this big magazine, I happen to know some guys there, and they're like, dude, we love your Ghost Rider. Well, you, in fact, yesterday I just found a Wizard cover that I did of Ghost Rider that's on sale on eBay right now for like $2,500 or $3,500 or something. And I sold that to Garib, like, it was like the price of whatever the cost of the thing was. He always wanted the piece, so, I hadn't actually seen that original in, I think, 20 years. I think. And I just saw, because every now and then I have a search thing where my name will pop up, and I saw this, and I checked it, and I was like, oh my god, like an eBay search, like, Sometimes I like to see if there's any what art goes for and stuff like that, or find some pages from pencilers that I really liked that I didn't get, and then they sell it on eBay later, and I get to snatch it up, you know? And I just saw that, so it's funny. And yeah, they were great. They did some great shows and stuff, and it didn't go very well for Garib, unfortunately, the way Wizard ended up.
Right.
He had some problems. I guess he went public, and then, you know, whenever you have other people controlling money and stuff, I think they kind of voted him. I don't know the whole story, so I'm not going to say anything, you know. I like to keep my mouth shut when I'm not really sure of it, you know. It ended up kind of fizzling out. I know that, you know, Wizard World is, Wizard was his magazine. You know, he started it in his garage, you know, with his parents. And, like, they had a small comic book shop in, like, Nyack, New York. Nice little suburban area of New York State. And he really built it into this fantastic magazine. And we used to go visit them up there. And he had a giant kind of industrial complex building, like the kind you'd see like at a, you know, some big company having, and several floors of offices, and, you know, and everyone in their office had like toys all over the place. And it was a very good, relaxed working environment. Everyone got along. It was really like, it was like a dream come true for someone who I think really loved comic books and wanted to start magazines and stuff like that. It was a definite rags to riches. Well, I don't want to say rags. He wasn't broke. He wasn't homeless or anything. Yeah. But, you know, he was a definite success story. And, so I don't know really what happened. I didn't follow it. I know things, some weird stuff happened, and, it's a shame because he's a nice guy, and I like him and his family, very much, you know.
Yeah, I always meant to look into that because I assumed that when the magazine ended, he kind of was out of it, and then now they're doing all the conventions and things like that, and it just doesn't seem like, I know they were doing conventions, but that didn't seem like under his hand, or like maybe somebody else under the umbrella.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that there were a couple things that factored into it. I mean, first off, magazines are not selling what they used to, you know. Print is disappearing. You know, you can't tap on a page and then go to somebody's website, you know, in a magazine. And they're just realizing that when, you know, if you look at the cost, the time to, you know, deliver and, you know, ship all this stuff, it's just really not worth it. And when you think about the environment and how many trees you got to cut down to, and if you know anything about magazines, the magazine industry, where basically you get all these magazines and you only pay for the ones that sell. Everything else you return. You rip, or you rip the covers off and just return the covers as credit. So it's basically throwing all these magazines away or recycling them. And it's very wasteful. It's one of the most wasteful, businesses I think I've ever heard of in my life. So digital is this new thing now. And at one point, you know, Wizard used to be this kind of thick magazine, and it was like the size of a comic almost, you know.
Yeah.
So I hadn't spoken to him in a while, but I was noticing that it was becoming something very small. And then I think after the magazine kind of went away, you know, what they really had, or either they just didn't survive the transformation into digital, you know, or online. I think what they had, they said, hey, these shows were moneymakers, so we're going to continue to, then we'll be just basically promoting and producing shows, which is a good business. You know, comics now are, bigger business than ever, you know, geek is chic, I guess they say. And, you know, just the overall culture of comics. I had a photograph. I teach at the School of Visual Arts, 2 days a week. I have a couple classes that I designed specifically for how to draw comics and stuff. And, I posted some photos of my classes. And some of my old students from back in the day, because I teach at the same school I went to, were like, oh my God, look at all the girls in your class. Yeah, aren't they cute? And I said, they draw better than the guys. You know? Why couldn't we have gone to school now instead of back then, you know? And, you know, back in our day, if we had a girl in class, it was one girl, you know, a bizarre facial twitch, you know? And like now it's I think more girls than guys, you know what I mean? And it's not some bizarre subculture of kind of, you know, some sort of weird nerd subculture. Like, just like nowadays it's become across the board kind of thing. It's a popular thing that everyone knows. And then Everyone now is enjoying going to these comic cons now. You know, all the kids love the cosplay. You know, it's like the new cool thing to do. And I think one of the things that have really changed that was a lot of the animated stuff. A lot of the Batman, the animated series, things like that, were getting kids to like comics, and they were very, very true to the comics as well, in a kid-friendly format for cartoons, daily cartoons.
You know, right.
I think that has really, really paid off now. Now you see, like, you know, these shows, and half the girls there are diehard comic book cosplayers, you know, Batgirl, you know, Poison Ivy or whatever, or, you know, you see, you know, real, and sometimes even some, like, a female Deathstroke the Terminator. You're like, wow. So things have really changed, you know, now. The cons are a big deal. You know, in fact, they have the New York show started out, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the New York Comic Con here.
No, I have not.
Well, basically years ago, it was kind of in the Pinta Hotel where they started a lot of these small conventions. And they were like those hotel ballroom ones in a small hotel. And then they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And one of the gentlemen, Fred Greenberg, very nice fellow, started doing them. They got so big. You know, San Diego was becoming this big event, and all the publishers and everybody, most of ours, were in New York anyway. So it was kind of foolish that in the town that had Marvel Comics, DC Comics, Harris Comics, didn't, you know, have the a good convention. Everyone had to fly across the country to do a Comic-Con. And he had a lot of problems with the union. There was a lot of corruption, mafia corruption within the union there. They all wanted money to do the job they were already being paid to do. And then he had a couple bad shows, and they gave him some trouble, so he kind of got put out of business. And then for quite a few years, there were like these little small shows around. And then finally, Repop, who's a company that just does shows, that's all they do, decided to start, you know, trying their hands at the Javits Center again with, you know, because Giuliani cleaned a lot of that up. He got rid of a lot of those guys. And they sold out. The first one was not too big, and they oversold it. People couldn't get in. The fire marshals were, like, shutting the doors. And then the second one, they doubled the size. They oversold it even more. People couldn't get in. And I was there at the board. I remember seeing people, like, almost fighting their way in. It was pretty crazy.
Wow.
And then now it's so big and ridiculous now. It's already turned into, like, San Diego, which is just kind of like a horror show where it has really nothing to do about comics anymore. I mean, they had a Geico booth.
Wow.
Like, dude, and they had like a Verizon wireless booth. Like, I don't know about you, but I don't remember Batman teaming up with the Verizon wireless Caped Crusader. You know, I don't know. Batman's like, Alfred, on my Verizon wireless communication, I've got four bars, Alfred. Like, I don't remember that at any point. You know, they had a Ford booth. Like, it's so badly commercial. Just, you know, and they put the artists like, you know, you go in this little cubby hole. You know what? In fact, you should pay for a table.
That's the one of the weird things I was telling my wife about with some of these cons, is the fact that we'll go to them, and especially the ones where the entertainment stars are the main attraction, and they could be playing a comic book character, say, like, oh, we've got Thor over here, or we've got, you know, the X-Men or something like that. And those are the people that people are coming to flock to. But you have the guys that actually created or, like, spent long years, and there's, like, no lines at the guys who actually toiled and made the X-Men become a franchise to turn into a movie.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm very aware of the power of television. You know, comics are cool and stuff, but television and film, it's a big deal. I get it. But, you know, like, do a movie con.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what the Oscars are for, isn't it? Like, last time I checked, like, you know what I mean? Like, I remember going to San Diego, and my first time was either 92 or 93, and getting to meet, like, Bernie Wrightson, you know, and other guys, and just, like, Jim Lee, or those who are Joe McFarlane, you know, just, like, guys, like, hey, how are you? Getting to talk to them and shoot the breeze, and find out what they're up to, and talk about, you know, their style, or what, you know, tools they use. Then they'd have a cocktail party that Marvel would throw, and you'd go there and have some drinks, have a good time. And then it very, you know, it wasn't too long after that where it turned into Buffy the Vampire Slayer's at the Dark Horse Boat. You know, this, like, this rush, bum rush of you know, screaming fans. I was like, dude, what's going on here? Like, you know, screaming, oh my God, David Boreas, you know. Yeah, all right, that's, you know, okay, you figured that would just be for a little while. Yeah. And then it really just turned into that. And then it just became, you know, let's, you know, like, I don't know, the School of Rock panel. Like, what is it? I don't know what that has to do with comic books. You know, I can understand the King Kong one, you know, when they were doing that movie, or, you know, the Green Lantern thing, they have some of those stars, or the new Thor movie, they had the Asgardian thing. Like, those, I get, they're comic book related. But it just seems like the whole reason of a Comic-Con is to kind of meet the creators and to exchange, well, you know, stories and get to talk to the fans. I remember when I was a kid, as an aspiring artist, you know, going to these shows, let's say New York, my dad would drop me and some of my friends off, and we'd, you know, and I'd look at the guy's artwork and I'd ask him questions, and he'd talk to me. Sometimes he'd slip me like a free comic book or a zine or something. I'd be like, wow, cool, you know, check out this comic this guy made up. Never heard of it before, never heard of it again after that, but you know, as a kid, it was just like, you know, hey kid, let me see your drawings. And I'm like, I see my, and I had my, like, my sketchbook there with my markers. I'm like, really? You want to see it? You know, and having somebody give me a nice review of, you know, huh, you should, I like this. You know, you draw feet well, kid, blah, blah, blah. Really? You think so? You know, and it was just, it was very magical, like, you know, that this sort of, and just so personal. And I don't think right. that they have that anymore. It's just, you know, we're going to make $4 million off this show, so shut up, get in the corner, and, you know, this is where yeah. we're going to pull the Lucasfilm stuff. It's going to go all across here, and we don't really need you. In fact, you should pay to come to our show and sit around here. It's good promotion for you. But no, it's not, actually, and there's no way I'm going to pay you to go work for you so you can make more money, and I have to pay for it. Yeah. No, that's not going to happen. I,
yeah,
no,
my... You know, my original co-host went to it was Comic-Con 2012.
Okay. San Diego?
San Diego.
Okay.
And he said he was walking the floor and saw Mark Waid at some booth and ended up having a half-hour conversation with him. And the first question was, I would expect there would have been a line here to see you. And he goes, yeah, so did I.
You know, the funny part is, it's like one thing if you go to a show in your hometown, you know, and you go do that and you get a limited response, that's one thing, right? But when you pay to fly across the country and you pay for a $700-$800 ticket, right? You throw in cabs to the airport, back and forth, you're looking at another $100, right? Then you throw in a hotel room, if you can get one in San Diego, like the entire town sells out. And if you can get a room, it's $450, $500 per room, because they just jack, you know, the hotels just raise the price accordingly, like that's what they do. I don't know why that's not called price gouging, or, you know, I don't know why there's not a law against that personally, you know, but they seem to be doing it, you know. So by the time you're done, you know, you throw in my bar bill, now you're at $2,500, you know. And it's just like, why would you spend that money? Because you can't work when you're there. You know, you're not working on, you don't have your art table set up and you're like, you know. So you're losing money every day you're there. So if you're losing $200-$300 a day, right, when you're there, and you're there for 4 days, like now you're out a grand and you got to pay $2,000. So it's like, I'm going to go spend $3,000 to sit at a table and meet a few people, like, no, it's not worth it. You know, if you're independently wealthy and you're just a, and you need attention so bad that you're going to pay like X amount just to sit there and be like, hi, do you know who I am? Let me sign that for you, you know? I don't know too many people in comics like that, you know? Well, there's someone like, do you know who I am? I know some of those guys, but I don't know any of them that are independently wealthy that can just throw that kind of money away to go literally promote a convention that isn't really helping you. Because if they wanted to, they'd make more deals with the hotels to get, you know, better rates on hotel rooms. If you're going to be a guest there, they'll get a hotel room for you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, give you some sort of discount, something like that. No, they don't have to. You know, because there are so many people, that are I guess are so desperate to make a name for themselves in this industry. And this happens, you know, like Harlan Ellison, if you're familiar with him, the writer, had this thing online that someone put on my Facebook, and it was a really funny thing, very brilliant. about the amateurs, and I don't want this to come off sounding unappreciative of young people trying to break into a business, but he said something about, I think he was writing for Babylon 5, that TV show. If you're
familiar with. Right.
And they were doing, or Stargate, I think it was Babylon 5, and they were doing some sort of big box set DVD set of all the seasons, and they wanted to put an interview that they did with him, back, I guess, you know, when they were shooting the show. So it's like a 10-year-old interview back in the day during the making as he discussed the characters that he was working on. And he said, okay, well, how much are you going to pay me? They said, well, you know, we're not going to pay anything. He said, well, then you can't use it because they needed to get his approval for it. And they said, well, you, this is good promotion for you. And he's like, no, it's not. Everyone knows who I am. This isn't promotion. It's promotion for you and your product. What are you going to pay me? And they said, well, but this is good. They said, no, it's not. I didn't pay. And they're like, well, we're not going to pay anything. He said, well, then you're not going to use it. But the other people are like, that's their problem. and it was, he made a very good point. And he talked about how that the amateur, an amateur writer or someone, will be so desperate to get their face on a DVD because they haven't written 90 novels like he might ever, you know, that they'll be like, yeah, use it for free. Don't worry about it. So then they expect everyone to do it. You know, like I know guys who will draw comics for free. That guy I talked to you about who wanted to write for Marvel, he would write for Marvel for free. And there are many of these guys who will do that. They'll take a $60 page rate. You know, and if you live in Bolivia, in, you know, in some, you know, like maybe $60 a page is good for you, because that, you might make you the richest guy on the block, but, you know, like that ain't gonna fly here in the States. You know, like, I'm sorry, you know. So, in a way, when you want to do something so bad, and it's a very common thing, if you want to draw or write or dance, or if you want to play rock and roll, you know, like something like that, you take a guy who wants to play rock music so bad, he's got his rock band, right? He's like, yeah, man, we're the Flaming Torches, man, you know, we want to play rock and roll, and, you know, they go to the record company, and they know that guy, all he wants to do is play rock and roll. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want to work at his dad's soda factory. He doesn't want to sell cars, right? You know what I mean? He really wasn't cut out for medical school, if you know what I'm talking about. Right? And they're going to, you know, just give him, you know, the lamest contract that they can find, and he'll sign it. You know? And even though it'll be completely one-sided, he'll sign that. And if he won't, that other guy behind him going like, yeah, dude, forget this guy. Forget this guy. Right? That guy will sign it. And if not him, the guy behind him, and the guy behind him, and that whole line that goes down the street, there's that other guy who's going to sign it. And I think in comics now, if you're a young, unknown artist and you want, like, this taste of what limited fame it is, it's very limited. You know what I mean? Like, you can walk down the street and ask somebody, do you know who, you know, John Buscema is? And a lot of people won't know who the hell that is. They'll say, Steve Buscemi? I love his work. He's fantastic. Pulp Fiction, yeah, that's where it is, you know. But there's this kind of thing where people want that so bad that they're willing to, sadly, kind of destroy the market for the working guys to the point where it's like, you know, now you've brought down the cost, you know, like the average rate to the point where most guys can't really, the good guys can't afford to do it. And I've seen guys who are like, I don't want to name names, but I, you know, it's just, I was talking to Jimmy Palmiotti on the phone the other day, and he was telling me about guys that we both know who are like huge names in the business that you'd be like, what? Wait, what? You know, like, you'd literally be like, you got to be kidding. I was going like, hey, Jimmy, have you got any work, bro? And then, you know, because Jimmy's doing a lot of these creator-owned things and stuff, and he's like, you know, and sadly, because it's stuff getting off the ground, you know, you can't pay as well as the big publishers, right, or whatever. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, I got something, but, you know, you're not going to like it because you're clearly not happy with what you're getting here. You know, but guys who you think, like, there's, well, let's throw a name out, and I'm not saying this is the guy, but let's say it's like Jerry Ordway, right? Someone who's like, someone so, like, well-known, so, you know, such a talent. Guys of almost like that caliber have been like, you know, hey, man, I'm looking for work. You got any? Like, really? Are you serious? So it's getting to that point where, you know, if you look at half the books are done by, you know, a couple guys from Malaysia and some dude from the Philippines. And, the artwork doesn't seem to really be up to snuff, and then you just know it's because that guy took a $60 page rate, you know, while, you know, and then you find out how much these things make, and you're like, So it's tough. You got this kind of these amateurs that come in there, and they're willing to do subpar work, but they don't care. A lot, you know, many of the guys, I mean, I've heard execs say this, like literally out of their mouth at Marvel. It's advertising for the movies. That's what they see it as. It's advertising for the movies. And if you notice, another common thing that they don't do is they really don't promote artists anymore like they used to. And it's a smart thing on their part, I think, personally, because what happens when you build up a Jim Lee or a Todd McFarlane or a Rob Liefeld, right, or a Dale Keown, what happens?
Exactly.
And the funny thing is when you look at all those titles, which ones have really survived? What, Spawn? Maybe? Like that really sort of Savage Dragon, maybe? I think Eric's still doing that. Out of all those, really?
Tom Cow's got, well, of course, what, Jim sold all his stuff to DC,
sold it all, they just absorbed it.
Yeah.
By himself. Do you think that thing would be a hot book and still going and still doing well? It's a good question. Listen, you don't know, right? But it's a good question. And I would think so,
but that, you know, he kind of wrapped me into his world when he was doing his Image stuff. So I would think it would, but he knows the dollars of it.
But if you look exactly, and I think he was smart and he just said, hey, you know what? This is a great opportunity to be here at DC and, you know, my characters will live on in this DC thing. And I'm now a very large part of a very powerful group and now I have more stability. Because all you need is a little bit of lack of interest, and then you don't have the money to publish the book anymore, and it disappears, and you're forgotten, and you're gone. You know? Then you're back to freelancing again. And you think they're going to treat you well after you left them and became their competition? No. You know? So, and I think people don't realize that you are not the star. You know? Spider-Man is the star. Right? Because you could take Todd McFarlane, and you could make him make a book about Todd McFarlane. And it wouldn't sell to my eye. Like, hey, he's a nice guy, but he doesn't shoot spiderwebs. You know, you're like, Wolverine is the star. You know, you are a star because you draw Wolverine. Right? You'd be a star if you created Wolverine, but most guys didn't. Right?
Right.
Like, most guys didn't. Most guys came in on something that was already very well done, that was already very cool, and they got in there, and then they added their little spin and their flavor on it, and then they put their name on it, and all of a sudden, it's not your name, it's Wolverine. I mean, you're just one of a long list of guys that added on to this new mythos, you know?
I think that was somebody brought the point up, and I can't remember if it was somebody tied to Dark Horse, or they were just making the point of, like, you know, if you're really looking to make your name, maybe think about doing, like, self-publishing or creator-owned, because, you know, ask somebody, or comic book fan, like, who created Hellboy? Or who created, you know, just about any of some of these self-created titles. It's like, well, name somebody that in the last couple of years that did Superman, or name somebody in the last couple of years.
Right.
It's a lot harder.
Right. If you say, like, who did Walking Dead, you said Robert Kirkman, right? You know, yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you understand how much work and finance it takes in order to publish stuff on a regular basis to keep it in the, you know, out there and selling. I mean, it costs probably, I mean, I haven't done the numbers in a long time. Back in the 90s, I did all the numbers of the printing and stuff. And, you know, if you're looking at a 20-page book, and let's say it's $350 for the penciling and inking, another $150 for the colors, so you're looking at $500. So you're looking at about $50,000. And also, $520. So you're looking at $10,000. Plus you're looking at the printing. Like, dude, it's depending on, like, shipping stuff to, like, it's a lot. Plus you got, like, warehouse your books if you got to put them in your basement or whatever. It gets ridiculous. Plus it takes a long time to draw a book. So you have to have a good paying job that you don't go to, that you can sit home and do work. You need to get the checks from the job that you don't go to because you're home doing the comic book.
Right.
And you do want those every month for 2 or 3 years until it builds up a little bit of a, you know, like at least Dark Horse at the time, they were, you know, it was just like, Mike, you just draw us this book, we'll sell it for you, we'll take care of everything. you know, and we'll split the profits. And he was a good enough name, and he's a very, very, very talented creator. So they knew that they were going to get something really good from him, and they did. They got it. It's one of my favorite books, Hellboy. Beautifully done, well written. It was really great to see how, you know, everyone knew how good he was as an artist, but to see how well he could do all of it nicely together and create a really interesting character. But he kind of had Dark Horse backing all that stuff. He didn't have to ship out the stuff and get prices and do this and that, and, you know. So it's like having an entire team of people behind you. And, you know. But you're right. Like, if you can assign your name to something that you created, and some guys are brilliant at doing that. If you've ever seen I used to make me laugh so hard when I would see whenever they had a Spawn cartoon, he always made sure that it was Todd McFarlane's Spawn, always. There must be in his contract that title is always Todd McFarlane's Spawn. So when you'd go through like the channels of your like guide on the TV, it couldn't fit Spawn. It would just say Todd McFarlane. You know, like, oh, really? Bastard, you. You know, like, genius, you know. Great promotion. It's like a commercial every time you flip through the thing.
Right.
You know? And so there are ways to do that sort of thing. And
I think even like the new image, the current image model, it seems like that's the kind of the thing too, where it's like, we'll take care of all the publishing and distribution and the warehousing and things. You create it. You still own the IP for it. We'll just handle all the business kind of stuff for you for whatever the cut is.
Well, if I remember, I think Image works. I haven't talked to Jim Valentino in a while. The last time I saw him was I think it was San Diego last time I saw him. And I think he's in charge of that stuff. And if I'm correct, you basically have to bring them a finished book that they like, and then they'll print it. They'll take the chance of printing it, because, you know, if you one of the things about these printers too, what they do, these publishers, is they buy printing in large bulks. So, you know, Marvel Comics knows they're going to print 2.5 million comic books every year. So they buy $2.5 million in printing. Now, if you buy 1,000 comics, it's, you know, $3 each. You buy 2.5 million, it's 22 cents a piece. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a mass, they can buy the paper in mass, they can buy the ink in mass, you know, and they're just like, okay, if we're going to do that much, we'll give you this price, you know, we just want your business. And so a company like that can do that. They can probably print it for much cheaper than you will ever be able to. They've got a warehouse place that they, you know, have for all their stuff. So yours will take up a little spot in the corner. They're not worried about it. It's not really going to cost them. They already have the warehouse paid for. You know, like, they already bought it probably a few years ago. They have one guy who works there. You know, whereas you know, would have to jam all these books in your apartment. I mean, I have like 10,000 posters that are in my studio right here in the back that, like, from ones we printed up years ago. But it's still sitting here, you know. Like, they should be in a warehouse somewhere, but they're in my studio. Well, I'm going to be doing this other stuff, so I'm going to give away free posters. So I figured I'll hold on to them. It's a lot more to it, you know what I mean? And very few people will work for free, and it's not, you know, it's a lot of work. And so just doing your own comic isn't really just like, I just drew it on my desk, and now I've got a comic book. It's not really that easy. There's a lot to it, you know.
Right.
And if you want to be like Hellboy or something. You know, as good as Mike is, and I think he's fantastic, Dark Horse was a great ad campaign. You know, in every book they had an ad for Hellboy. You know what I mean? And, you know, they would do the Hellboy books, and they'd do the trade paperbacks and all these things, and that, you know, those are thick. Those things, you know, 10 of those in a box, that's a big box, you know? And they had that production machine. You know, they were buying, you know, stuff in bulk. They were doing. They had the money for advertising. They had a team that knew about advertising, where to put it. You know, they'd go to San Diego, they'd have a giant Hellboy thing on the stand that you could see from across the convention, you know. So it's not just, you know, he just drew it and wrote it, right? So there's a lot that goes into play there.
Now, let's get it a little bit, because during my introduction, I also used the word actor, musician. Let's touch in on some of that.
Okay.
The other side, people don't know of Nelson.
Well, I've been doing, I'm a musician. I've been playing guitar for 36 years now, I think. I don't know, it's like 82 or something. It's been a long time. And right now I'm doing a project called Megadroid, which is it's a heavy metal record. And the approach is, and again, I like I told you about being the luckiest guy in the world. I try to do professionally everything that I love to do, right? And I figure if you're really good enough at it, you're really good enough at drawing comic books, you can do that professionally, right? And if you're really good at writing heavy metal songs, you can do that professionally, you know, any of those things. You know, if you're really good at doing voice stuff or whatever, you can do that professionally. So one of the things I'm doing now, and I've been doing this for years, is just writing songs and putting them together and stuff. And, you know, I really didn't take it seriously for so many years because normally the old motif of doing a band is you get a bunch of guys who are musicians, so they're already kind of flaky, right? And then, you know, you put together, you know, a demo or you start playing out in places and you hope an A&R person comes and sees you, and then you sign a terrible contract and they want you to tour to places that are empty, that you play to no people, and then you end up owing them all this money. And I never thought that that was ever going to work. I just didn't like it. And but I wrote a lot of songs. I kept stockpiling them for many years. Even little riffs, I'd, you know, record them and put them away. It's like, you know, riffs in this tuning, riffs in this. This is fast, this is slow, blah, blah. This one's creepy, this one's kind of faster, you know. At one point I was playing in my studio. I have a music studio. I have a recording studio in my house here, but I have a place where I can really crank it up for fun. It's just a rehearsal place in Williamsburg. Okay. And I was playing one night, because I share it with like some the Williamsburg Salsa Orchestra, which is the funniest thing. But they just got a blurb in like Rolling Stone. They had like an article on them, and really well. They're the Williamsburg Salsa Orchestra, and they do this cool covers of salsa-y stuff. It's hilarious. Also, the Tool cover band Schism was in our room. It smelled like pot most of the time. So I was playing there one night, and my buddy John Newman came in, and it was like 10 o'clock at night or midnight, because he just did a wedding. And then he came in at 10 in the morning to go do a bar mitzvah or something. And he's like, "You're still here?" Because I saw him in, and I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You've been playing all night?" I'm like, "Yeah." These lists of songs to go over and pray, because you gotta, I sing and play, so you have to kind of keep practicing them, and you know, right. And then every time you practice them some more, you come up with a little new piece to it, and it starts to build, and he's like, "Dude, you don't have a band?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know." And he's like, "Listen, I know a guy, perfect for you, he's this great drummer," and he introduced me to this guy, Dave Lopez, and we jammed one time, and he was like, "Dude, I love these songs, that's it, man. I'm in, count me in." And I was like, "All right." So we started just like working on a bunch of songs, and then I do these live karaoke shows as a goof. We do them here in New York. We used to do them at the Arlene's Grocery, which Time Out New York said it was the top 10 best things you can do in New York. Was voted one of the top 10. You know, it's like tourist magazine things. Time Out. Right. I have one for Florida there. where it's a live band, and you come up and sing live like karaoke, but it's like a live band on a stage, and you get to really. It's like having your own band without the headaches of having a band. You know? And so my one guitar player is like, "Dude, these songs are great too." He's like, "I'll play bass." And he's also a recording engineer. So we just started putting the record together. And one of the things I did was each song is, you know, each one you try to tell a cool story, right? And all the heavy metals, one thing I like about heavy metals, it's kind of like all the shit I liked when I was like 12 to 14, you know, like, everything, you know, like giant killer robots with laser eyes that, you know, burn the city down or something, or, you know, evil devil cults, or, you know, like heavy metal has all those kind of cool things. Like, I don't know about you, but the Terminator movies were cool when I was like 12, and they're still cool today. Like, old science fiction films, horror films, you know, stuff like that. I just wanted to kind of bring that all together, and I kind of did. So each song is about a character or a theme or something. And then those characters, I'm going to do comic books with that as well. So, like, they have accompanying comic books that are based on that. But then each character of each thing is also interrelated in an entire universe as well. So, for example, Megadroid is like this giant robot that they discovered in a silo underground, and they don't know who built it, what its purpose is, right? And they just they really don't know what it's for. They think it's a defensive mechanism. They're not sure. They don't know when they built it, because when they go near with any time-measuring device, it gets weird, you know? So that's one story, for example. So that's what the band is based on. Then there's Attack of the KT-88s, which are these killer robot drone things, you know, which are also based in the same storyline. And even when stuff is out of time, you know, it's a sort of anachronistic thing, it's still related because it's something that's in the future, something from the past, a relative, an ancestor. So everything's kind of tied in. So each thing is going to have like a companion comic book, like at least an 8-page story to start with for each song. And then a lot of the songs in the second album are also continuations of those things and the ideas. So each one kind of branches out, and it's all kind of one kind of cool thing. And, you know, since no one's buying music nowadays, it's something where I'm going to probably give away half the record for free. It's going to be on freemegadroid.com. Okay. That's pretty easy to remember, right? You know? And then you get at least like half the songs for free. But then if you want the comic books or stuff, that's going to be limited edition stuff for all the collectors. So, like, you know, I want to get that picture disc. Like, we're going to do really nice color-painted picture discs with cool monsters and robots and stuff. And then that's limited. It'll be, you know, 5,000 or 1,000. And that's it. Once it's done, it's done. You can't get it. So that should help the collector's market. And then it's just, you know, and I think a lot of band and music people, they're collectors. You know, they like to have that signed thing or that CD or that comic. And they, you know, but I made one mistake, actually, because I always wrote songs about stuff I liked. And I like comic books, right? So I wrote a song about Galactus, right? I wrote one about Punisher called Punished. I wrote this one, Arms of the Hydra, which is on this record, actually. It's going to be on the first record. But I made the mistake of, like, writing about something that I don't own. I can't do comic books of the Hydra. Like, I don't own Marvel. I can do a song about it, but I can't really do any imagery, that any of the Marvel imagery. I can't use any logo similar, you know. But then I realized, why don't I talk to the guys at Marvel Online and let me see if I can get them to okay them giving it away. And I can give it to them as like a freebie. So what they can do is like whoever signs up to Marvel Online that week or any of the online subscribers get this free song download of Arms of the Hydra for free. You know? And maybe it's one of the pay songs that I have on my site, but for them it's free. And maybe we'll do a little companion comic, the 8-page comic I would do for my thing, I'll do for them. So they get like a little mini comic based on that. Or so maybe a special giveaway for premium subscribers or something. And they were like, you know what? Sounds like a pretty good idea. So like, as soon as it's ready, I gotta do a Kickstarter just to, try to recoup some of the costs, cause it's very expensive, the mixing and mastering. I got a really great guy, who was in, Life of Agony at, he was a Carnivore. I think he was in Life of, I think he was in Typo Negative for a little while. His name was Joey Z. Okay. Very talented producer and player, doing the mixes, and they sound like really good. So it's really, everything's high end, and there's a lot of cool stuff in it that aren't just rock songs. There's like cinematic intros and stuff like that sound more like a, something from a movie, these like kind of soundtrack things. In Attack of the KT-88s, it's like a battle scene. You hear these bombs going off, and the soldier guy screaming and stuff blowing up, and then the song starts. Megadroid has a launch where you hear all the guys on the computers and they're all, you know, getting ready, and you can hear the thing literally like walking and they're like slamming in there, you know, and the rockets going, like the rocket boosters like igniting and stuff. So it's more than your average sort of rock thing, and it's coming out really cool. And being that it's going to be mostly for free, I think it's going to be a great project. So I want to get the Kickstarter just to cover, it's about 10 grand for about mixing and mastering. So it's not chump change, you know. So, and if I can get that money, then I can start on the second. At least I know. If I can get that much, then I can justify, or at least sure. I can tell myself, all right, you know, that, okay, if you got this to cover that, then you're on to the next one. Well, I think it's a good project. Whenever I play the songs for anybody, I've got nothing but thumbs up, you know. Even the people, I always play for people who I know will tell me, like. And it has to be good. Nowadays, you know, there's so much, you know, if you want to compete in the realm of Metallica, you know, you better be good.
Yeah.
Because even if you're better than Metallica, which is not going to happen, people love Metallica. Like, that by, you know, by default, that's right. Their band. You know what I mean? Right. So, like, to somebody even compare you, even if you could be better, you'd still never really be as good because that's their thing. Right. So even to come near there, right. So even so, you got to come as close as you can for them to even acknowledge that you exist, right? You know what I'm saying? So, but it's got a lot of great feedback and it's sounding really cool. I think it's, I'll send you guys some copies.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
So I guess I'm going to go a little old school with this question then. So to say with this project, it's going to be a little Rick Wakeman meets Meatloaf meets heavy metal.
Wait, who's Rick Wakeman?
Keyboardist for Yes, who did did like the Knights of the Round Table, epic albums.
Those were really sort of pompous almost. Yeah. That was that crazy prog stuff that you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But it was so theatrical.
Well, listen, I mean, if I end up doing very, very well with this, I can guarantee you we're going to have some cool robots on stage. I can tell you that, you know. But, well, you know what? In this short attention span generation that I believe I'm also part of, even though I guess we're old farts compared to some of my students and stuff, like you got to get to it. You know,
right.
Even like the intro, the launch for Megadroid, that'll be like a separate track that you can just fast forward through to where the song starts. So it's like a seamless part between the launch and the thing, but like it'll be cut right on there. So it'll just be like boom, you know.
So instead of having those 2 second gap in between tracks, it's gonna be the marker.
You can just like skip through that and you can just take the song if you like it, or you know, you might want them both together, whatever. So they're all kind of done like that. And I'll probably give multiple versions away that if you don't like it, you can download this and delete that one, or you know what I mean, put them. So, but I try to keep it quick, to the point, and cool and interesting, and the songs aren't too long, or you know, they're to the point. They got to get in there, get your verse, get your hook, get your riff, get out. You know, can't take all day with that stuff. People won't put up for it, you know.
I'm holding back. I'm an audio engineer at Walt Disney World, and I've been in this industry 28 years. So I want to get more into tech talk. You know what? You know, what type of console? What effects? But I know as soon as I start that, listeners are gone. I hear this part of the show.
Real quick, Neumann TLM 103. It's the black one that they call the monolith.
Yeah.
Because I have this old 2001 Space Odyssey. Problem. I'm building a HAL 9000. I was working on it today. I'll send you a photo of it.
Yes.
I built it by hand. It's in a big rack. It has the eye, it has a little thing with the speaker in it so it talks and has these TV screens on it and has all this other blinking stuff and the little red eye. So I got this whole 2000. I wrote a song called 1x4x9, which is about the monolith itself. And when I found out that they made the mic that they called the monolith, I'm like, that's what I wanted to get. And I found out that they made the black one called the monolith. That's it. I have a Focusrite MK430 preamp.
Okay.
It's a neat design, and I run that as Pro Tools. I'm using a Hackintosh computer that my buddy built for me. So I got a Mogami Snake that I run from my vocal booth into there. And I'm using some enclosed speaker cabinets so I can really crank the metal up and get that crank sound.
Right.
And it sounded pretty good. It's, you know, I'll be done soon. I'll send you some stuff. You'll like it.
Oh, I can't wait.
The mastering is going to be done by a guy who just did the Alice in Chains record.
Okay.
So we're dealing with some good people who really know what they're doing. And it's going to be fun, man. I'm psyched. And again, when I started doing this, I said, you know what, let's just do this. Let me just write the songs because sooner or later, I could get hit by a bus, you know. You get killed walking your dog one day, get hit by a car, you know. And I have all these songs. They do nothing here except entertain me. Until they're done, recorded, put together, packaged, and put out there, no one will ever know, you know. And I just said, you know, my buddy in the studio was like, dude, you got to do something with these, because he was like listening to it outside the door, and he was like, yeah, man. Heavy, I like that, you know? And sometimes we just get guys coming by the studio knocking like, damn, who are you guys? Mega Joy, like, where can we see you? We're like, nowhere. On Weeby Geek. I'm just trying to get that done, I can die happy once these are, you know, like to say that actually I have my own record and I did the artwork and I wrote all the songs, I play guitar and bass on them, you know, My one buddy played a few little bass lines, and Dave Lopez did the drums. I even programmed the drums on one song, which actually is not going on this one. It's called Bite of the Mugatu, which is another kind of mistake when you write stuff about Star Trek that you love. You know, the Mugatu is that white gorilla thing with the unicorn horn.
Yeah. Right.
So, and he gets that chick, brings that weird root, and she's doing all that weird witch dance, and I just came up with this riff one day, and I was like, that's the part of the Mugatu, that's it. And it's out. Like, I figured, again, there's only so much stuff I can do with this, because I can't do Star Trek comics, because, again, that's a license that they've done comics with. I can't really do a music video featuring anything like that or whatever. But the great part is my drummer Dave's uncle was on the original series back in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Dude, I kid you not. He was on the episode of Shore Leave, you know, with the Alice in Wonderland
one. Yep.
Yeah.
Like a handgun, and then there's a samurai. He beats up Finnegan. Captain Kirk beats up his old nemesis, Finnegan, from the Academy. The silver shirt. And his uncle played Rodriguez in the red shirt. Like, he was one of the only red shirt guys who, like, didn't die. So I have some Star Trek royalty in the band. So that one, there are a couple parts I didn't like, and I just refuse to finish any song until it's there. So that one's going to go on the next album, or it's going to be like a kind of a cool freebie or something I would like to circulate on the Star Trek sites, because I think that Star Trek fans would like something like that, you know, and I think that would be a great way to get the word out, especially there's a lot of sci-fi stuff in it, too, so if you like that, you'll most likely like Megadroid and stuff. So
I'm curious how much of a crossover there is between, like, Star Trek fans and heavy metal, because those almost don't seem like they naturally go together, but...
I don't know. That's a good question. The funny thing about Star Trek fans, they come from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know? Like, I'm an old metalhead, and I love Star Trek. Most of my metalhead buddies love Star Trek. And then you, like, meet some, like, you know... the only guys that don't love Star Trek too much are usually jocks, kind of like that, you know. But most kind of, like, they come from all types, you know. Yeah. Doctors, lawyers, like, all different kinds of people love Star Trek, you know. And I just, you know, I wrote the songs about things that I like, you know. Like, that's what comes to my head when I'm thinking of some riff that reminds me of this or that. Or, you know, it would be cool if I wrote about this, you know. You're playing around with some riff and it sounds cool, and then you just throw in something and you're like, ooh, that's good. You know, and then you start building on that, and then it becomes something, and then you realize it's somebody else's property. Can't do anything.
Well,
it's so cool.
When you get the Kickstarter ready, when you do the press release, let us know. We'll get it up on the site, and we'll plug it on Facebook and Twitter as well. Definitely help you out.
Thanks, man. I got a Megadroid page, which doesn't have much on it now because I'm waiting to, like, you know, get stuff going. But it's on Facebook, so if you want to go ahead and like that, I appreciate it.
No problem.
And you guys will keep you up to date on all the news.
Oh, that's why we call ourselves the official voice of the Geek Revolution. We try and get what we can out there.
Nice. Good.
We even had the guys for a web series to start, Geek Cred.
It's wow.
Dan Barnes, Michelle Boyd, Miley Yamamoto, Team Unicorn.
Okay.
Damien Poitier, or Poitier. God, I can't talk tonight.
it's getting late. It's early.
Yes, it is. But they're doing this web series, and since they completed their Indiegogo campaign, they've announced some kind of heavy hitters, guest stars, and they're hoping eventually, going from web series, that they're going to be like the next community, you know, that started off online and went network. And I think they got a chance. It's something I followed, and, you know, we don't touch on a lot of the Kickstarter campaign stuff, but, you know, when there's stuff out there that's viable and worth hitting, it's definitely, what would you say, Marty? It's something that's really got to draw our attention.
Yeah, it's something that's near and dear to us that we
and unique.
I mean, listen, the problem with the internet, unfortunately, there's so much stuff out there that, you know, as much as I was complaining about, like, record companies before, the one thing that we do not have now, which is very much a shame, is the old school idea of if you went into a record store when they existed, no matter, you could look all, up and down all the shelves, right, and there'd be tons of different, genres of music and all these different bands, and you may, maybe you don't like jazz, maybe you don't like country, maybe you don't like rap, maybe you like rock, and out of the rock, there's certain kinds of rock that you like, you don't like that, you don't like the hair metal, you don't like this, you don't like that, you don't like jock rock, you want this, and then you like this and that, but even if you pick any one of those, and you played it on, you know, your CD player, the quality of the record would be very good, because the company would find a good producer, they'd sit down with the talent, the producer would really coach that talent, work with them, and you know that song, it's good, but you do the chorus way too many times in the end. You should shorten it because it's unnecessary. And the guy starts to, you know, you're right. And the guy knows what he's doing because that's what he does for a living, right? And then the producers and all the engineers, and you're an audio guy, so you know.
Yep.
Like, you know, they make sure that that record sounds really good. And it may not be your cup of tea. In fact, you might even be like, well, I don't know, this is kind of blasé or, you know, a little too cliche for me or whatever. But at least it was well done. And now with the internet, it's just a barrage of everything. And it's so hard to, and it's guys like you, who, when you do pass on a word of this or that, it's the new word of mouth. And that's the,
right.
I think that's the only way. And that's what I'm really counting on more than anything. Maybe, you know, hopefully we'll have a little promotion from Marvel doing that if they would choose to do that, which I hope. I have a few magazine guys that I gotta talk to some of the guys at like Revolver Magazine. I did some cartoons with them. You know, they do rock stuff, and, you know, I think that because of that I'll be able to get them at least listen to a few songs. They'll be, well, you know, they'll know I'm not full of it, and some guy, you know, because a lot of everyone's in my bands. That you ever see those guys on American Idol? I'm the best in the world. And it's like, oh, dude, you sound like a dying moose. It's like you're the best singer in the world. You know, and the guy's all timid and can't even sing. He's all nervous. Like, yeah, best singer in the world. All right.
Yep.
So you get a lot of guys, and the internet is the perfect forum for that. You know, check this out. Check this out. We're launching this one, and it's hard to weed out all that stuff. That's what the record companies at least did. They had the A&R guys go to all those terrible concerts. And find the one band that these guys are good. They're going to go somewhere. Let's get these guys now. You know,
I would love to see the Palladia channel do, since that Palladia, at least down here on our cable network, it's an all music channel.
Okay.
And that's where I first caught David Grohl's Sound City documentary.
Oh yeah, that was very good.
I fell in love with that. It's like, okay, I got to go get a copy of everything involved with this.
That old people, right?
But that's where the Daryl's House show is on, with Daryl from Hall & Oates.
I remember that was just a subscriber-only web show, actually, at one point.
My
brother subscribed to it. It was only internet via subscription. And that was really cool, that show.
Yeah. I would love to see them do a reality show, sort of like FX, or not FX, Face Off, or the Jim Henson's Creature Shop, for audio engineers. Because one of my pet peeves, being an audio engineer myself, is I could tell when you're dealing with a new age audio guy as opposed to old school, and how you tell the difference is where are the vocals in the mix. If the vocals are out front and present, it's an old school guy.
Okay.
If they're buried in all the instrumentation, it's a new school guy. And it's like, if you got a singer, I want to hear him.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want to be sitting there going, he's there somewhere.
As a singer myself, though, you're kind of like, could you hide me down? Like, you don't want to like stick out too much, because then everyone's like listening to every little, is he off a little bit there? Like, the instrument. I also like the fact that when the instruments are really loud, you don't hear the singer too much, it sounds out of control.
Mm.
Like metal band, like sometimes when you can barely just hear like Lemmy, like over that rumbling of the bass and guitars, that's when like the band sounds so out of hand, you're like afraid you're going to get hurt by standing in the front row.
but there's still that, you know, with heavy metal, there is that edge, or that, you know, almost verge of feedback type scenario.
Right, right, yeah.
The vocals can be heard, but they're buried just enough in the mix
to
be heavy metal. But when you're sitting there and you're having to really get, you know, pop that blood vessel on your forehead going
to hear what the words are.
Where are the vocals? It's too much.
Well, a lot of that's the frequencies, too, making sure that, you know, certain things live in a certain area. And if you have, like, they call the kick drum the 50 hertz. The kick drum and a lot of bass, for example, live in the same area. Yep. So what they have to do sometimes is take out part of the bass frequency so that kick drum area kind of fits in there. They're not really overlapping. Then you get muddy and stuff like right. that. So that's a thing, too. When I write stuff, I make sure that try to keep the vocal, you know, the guitar, the keyboards, and kind of think about where everything is in the bass and stuff. So right. you have kind of this nice change of the frequency, so everything's kind of clear and separate.
The other trick I do, too, is panning, putting everything in its own pocket as well. And that helps compensate for the frequency.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Are you, you know, I was telling you, it's funny, audio, and I'm sorry we brought you into an audio conversation, but,
No, it's fine. I'm actually used to it. I used to work at a rock station here in Nashville. So I haven't heard it maybe to this depth, but at least I'll hear it every once in a while.
Because I teach at SVA, and one of the things I tell the students, because my course is like a crash course, to kind of break down all the things that these artists do and kind of start them fresh, building on the structure of the figure and getting it right and stuff. And I tell them that, like, bad hands and bad feet are a dead giveaway of bad art. And it's just that when you go see them, the best way to know it's a low budget film is bad audio. Like, anytime you see a bad independent film, like, even if you listen to Clerks, like, the audio, as funny as that movie is, you know, it's just him, Kevin Smith, doing a, you know, really low budget job with very little money and stuff. And the audio is beefed up as best they can get it, but it's still bad microphones, and it's like, that's usually the number one giveaway of a low budget film is bad audio. And I kind of use that as a segue into talking about bad hands and feet. Once you can see, like, you know, inexperienced artists, these like stiff hands that just don't look right and holding a telephone like this. Doesn't work, you know? It's more predominant. You notice it when it's not there. You take it for granted.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all right?
Yep. So, this is running longer than I expected it to for tonight, which is great.
All right.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Usually I use Facebook, right? I don't have really a website for my artwork right now because years ago I was like going to put one together. And then the girl I had was, like, not getting anything done, and then I just put it on the back burner and a million other projects to do. So I do have to get the Megadroid website ready to go soon. So I'm probably going to do a personal art website that you can link to through there. Okay. Or maybe it might even be part of the Megadroid site, or like a little thing, you know, bio stuff, and then here's some of his art. But if you want to find me, it's just very easy on Facebook. I'm Nelson Farrow DeCastro at Facebook there. And I have the Megadroid page. For right now, that's really the best thing for me. I'm on Twitter as well, Nelson Farrow, Nelson_Farrow. But I don't use Twitter too much. I kind of find it to be useless. You know what I mean? Like, it's just someone retweeted a quote of a thing. And, like, and then when you find out who did it, they have no info of who really they are. And you don't know where. Like, I find it useless. Like, unless you're, you know, a big movie star or some pop star, if you're like Rihanna, and you're like, hey, I just farted. # just farted. You know, like, my God, Rihanna just farted. And did you hear that? Like, you know, unless people hang on your every word, I find it to be useless because you can't really have a meaningful conversation on there. You know, you got to be on it because you have to be. I just, I don't really find that there's that much stuff I really need to tweet about. I stubbed my toe. # ow. You know, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's me. You know, I just find, at least on Facebook, if you friend someone and you see their updates, and then you can go see some photos of them in action, see what their deal is. Read up about it. Where did this guy go to school? What does he do for, all right. You know, hey, this girl is pretty. Did she do some bikini modeling? Let's look at the albums. My bikini modeling out. I guess she did. All right. Like, at least you get to, like, learn about, you know, that person, and you can message that person and they can talk to you back, you know, stuff like that.
So Joan Rivers, I just farted. # Sam Blash at the coffee table.
Actually, that's my fake Joan Rivers Twitter account. Oh.
Well, I just gave you credit for the sandblasting the table joke. Hashtag.
Sandblasting the table. She was sitting on a table when she farted? What's wrong with you? Get off the table.
It's all the plastic surgery.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's getting to look like an alien, sadly. She's a funny gal, man. I've seen her do stand-up a couple times. And I'm like, that lady's pretty funny, man. So,
yeah, you kind of forget that with all the award shows and things like that she's done. You kind of forget she was, like, a really funny and...
Really funny comedian. Like, and if you've ever seen her do, like, you know, in a nightclub where they can get blue, you know, and, like, you know... Like, even Buddy Hackett, who was known mostly for doing, like, these cartoon voices of, like, some of those Disney films, his comedy roots were, like, filthy. They were, like, wonderfully filthy, you know?
The one that shocked me was Jackie Mason.
Yes.
And then knowing that he was a rabbi, I'm like, are you kidding me?
I mean, wow. I know he came from a devout Jewish family. I think the whole thing, he kind of went into comedy rather than being, like, following in his... In fact, I think that Krusty the Clown kind of episode in The Simpsons, I think is based on him, that he didn't follow his father's footsteps in Judaism because he wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I think that was based on him. I'm not sure.
I'm looking it up right now. Good old Wikipedia.
It's Google, right?
I want to say... Okay, I didn't know he was from Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Wow, Sheboygan. That even sounds Jewish. Sheboygan! Sheboygan! Okay. I saw his show on Broadway, and I saw his show, and then twice I saw him at a restaurant in the window. Same restaurant. So I think he'd go, because Broadway, my mom lives right nearby there, right by the Theater Row there. And actually, that's right now where DC and Marvel are right nearby, like the 50s on the east side, west side. And I saw his show once on Broadway. Very funny guy. And then a couple of times walking, like, just down the street, I saw him sitting, you know, next to the glass in some, like, delicatessen or something. And I remember just, like, kind of looking at him, like, hey, like, he'd be like, hey, and he's like, hey. And he would always talk in this thing about after the show, did you eat? Yeah, did you eat? You want to go eat? That's good. Okay. And I guess after the show, he goes, go eat.
Well, according to Wikipedia, Mason graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree from the City College of New York, CUNY, New York. At age 25, he was ordained a rabbi, as his three brothers, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather had been, in La Trobe, Pennsylvania.
La Trobe, wow.
3 years later, he resigned to become a comedian.
Hmm. You know what? So maybe that's where that Krusty the Clown thing came from. That may very well be.
Yep.
And that the father and him, in fact, the guy who plays his father in that cartoon is either him, or it's like Hank Azaria doing like a great impression of him, Jackie Mason.
I think it was Jackie Mason.
Yeah, see? So there's a good chance that maybe that might very well have been based on him.
Nice.
So, funny.
I know for me, next time I get back to New York, one of the places I would love to go check out, because as we talked about at MegaCon, I also run a Marvel podcast. I would love to go check out the Marvel facility. I know it's a hard thing to do.
How can I say this? I just had a discussion with this with a friend of mine Friday evening, because I have to go up to Marvel to do art returns on Friday. Some of the Deadpool stuff as an inker, I get it sent to me, and then I finish it, I scan it, and then I end up with a pile of the pages here, and I got to go return it so the pencil can get theirs. And I wanted to go see some editors, because being that I was done with that project, I need to scout for some more stuff. And I was speaking to a friend of mine who used to wrestle. He used to work for the WWF in Mexico and stuff. He was a luchador down in Mexico City, too. He's a good friend of mine. In fact, he runs... a really wonderful con called the Eternal Con that's in Long Island at the Cradle of Aviation Museum. And it's one of the really good, fun conventions. It's a new thing. They just started it first time last year. But I used to be a wrestler back in the day. And years ago, I used to live around the corner from Marvel. And a lot of the guys would come over to my place after work. We'd crack some beers and stuff and go to a local bar. The Rodeo Bar used to be around the corner from there. That was like the Marvel Bar. Still is. In fact, I'm probably going to go there tomorrow. By my last class I'm teaching for the summer, and I might go visit some friends there tomorrow. It's around the corner from the school as well. And I used to be able to go up there. I mean, usually to get in there, you needed to make an appointment, you know,
right.
And someone would come get you and take you to the editor's office. And they used to have school tours where the guy dressed up as Spider-Man, and they take the kids around and show how the comics are made. And then I guess, you know, people desperate to get work that the editors didn't want to deal with, they didn't want hanging around the offices as well. Because I knew a guy in particular, for example, who would kind of show up in the office and hang around there all day. And they're like, what's this guy do? Like, get this guy out of here. Who is this guy? And,
oh, trust me, I'm not looking for work. I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
It's like, but this was years ago. This was in the 90s,
right.
You know?
Right.
And then they started to get a little more like, no one wanted to be, like, harassed. They got their job to do, and they don't need, like, some dude in the office who really shouldn't be there. So then, like, they started the security card kind of thing, where it's like, you know what? And especially, like, at the back door. Like, I used to go up the stairs in the back, because I didn't want to bother the receptionist. Half of my friends worked in the bullpen. I knew half of the editors. Like, you know, I didn't want to make them have to come up to the front to come get me. So I go up to the side door, and I come in the staircase, you know, the stairwell, and just come in the side by the bullpen, drop off my stuff, go say hi to some dudes, you know, drop off some pages with the editor, say quick hello, you know, then I chill out with the guys until they were, like, maybe ready to go to lunch. We'd go grab a bite to eat. And it was, like, no big deal. I was harmless. I was not overstaying my welcome. Kind of things like that. So it was cool. And then I think you had other guys who would like show up there and they're like, ah, this guy again. Like, how you doing? You mind if I, and the guy would sit down in the office and like get this guy out of my office. Like, you know, like, I don't have anything for you. You know, like, you're not really good. You know, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you. But I think that was kind of the beginning of it. And then there was 9/11 kind of thing, and then there's this weird terrorist stuff where, you know, the security became like a big thing. People were afraid someone's going to walk into a building, and then you had to have your name on a ledger down. And it was like the whole building, like whether you were DC or Marvel, like it wasn't important. The guy who owned the building had this new policy. You know, the billion-dollar building corporation just said, listen, you know, this is the new security thing that our specialists have told us we need to implement. And you can go up to DC, but you have to call first, and they have to call up to get your name, and you have to be on the list, or else you won't go up.
Right.
That happened with DC. DC was more corporate than Marvel was. Marvel was more of a family thing. And it was more of a kind of guys hanging out, family-oriented group, versus DC, because DC was, for the longest time, was owned by, and still is, owned by Warner Brothers. Right. And Warner Brothers is a very big corporate outfit. And it's one of the things that really DC was able to survive on, because there were years that DC would lose $1 million. It's a bad year, comic sales, they launched some things, or they invested in something else. And they were always under the, they were listed in Warner Brothers under the R&D, Research and Development Department. So that way, if they lost any money, it was okay. They could just write it off. Because they also gave them a $1 billion movie. You know, license. So it's okay. You lost $1 million. Well, we made $1 billion. So, yeah, you know, it's okay. So that allowed DC to do some things that Marvel kind of couldn't. Marvel didn't have this kind of saving grace. So it was kind of had to make money. And then eventually what happened is, after just that terrorist stuff and some things, it got more and more corporate. It was bought by richer Wall Street guys. First it was Ron Perlman from Revlon. Owned that. Then it was Carl Icahn, you know, took it over then at some point. And, you know, so I was up in the office Friday, and I was relating this to my friend who also worked in WWF, and it was like the same thing where years ago, you walk in there and you go say hi to everybody. Like, you know, I used to hang out in the bullpen around 5 o'clock in the bullpen, like after, you know, they were done with their work for the day. Like, the guys would hang out, they'd break out a little Jack Daniels and some paper cups and, you know, and they break out some of the artwork that they were doing on the side, you know, their side projects, and we talk about it and kind of tell some funny stories and look at the artwork that people were submitting to try and be artists and like crazy psychos. Let me tell you, stuff that they submit, we could be on here for another 3 hours. I mean, there's stories of the psychotic stuff that people mailed to Marvel. Dude, I mean, literally like... like, dude, you wanted to wash your hands and, like, wash your brain after you saw this. It was, yeah, it's out there. That's some stuff was out there.
Yeah.
Hey, Marty, I see a return with Nelson.
I've been to enough cons where you kind of go through the artist alley, and it's the guy, you start flipping through the book, and you get towards the back of the book, and all of a sudden it's just, you know, images of Batgirl and Batman in ways that you had not really hoped to.
Like, there was just stuff where it was just, it's not even like some sexy stuff, like, it's just like creepy.
Yeah.
Like, just things like, only an insane person would do this. And maybe they're outside right now, like, you know, like kind of crazy. But anyway, so, like, there was that kind of relaxed atmosphere. At one point, Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, they gave them, like, the top roof of the building to start Marvel Knights, kind of like their own department. And we used to go hang up there, like go on the roof of the building and chill out when it was nice out. Like, it was just a whole different thing. Like, the people let you do what you did, they weren't too crazy about it. Now that Disney bought it recently, like, they have these offices up there where it's so uninteractive. Everyone's in a cubicle, and it's quiet, and you have to be walked, you know, like, escorted to each kind of, like, you know, like, luckily I've known these guys for so many years that I can go right into the president's office and give him a hug and sit down and breathe. I can go to Joe Quesada's office and give him a high five, and we start, you know, let's come on, so rest me, or, you know, like, I can do that. A lot of people can't. But it's this dead quiet. Everyone's afraid to be talking too loud. And it's more like a legal office or something, like, you know, there's not even the talking of traffic of people doing work. Everyone's like quiet, clicking on their computer. And my buddy mentioned that he said it was the same thing. He said that WWF used to go in there, go say hi to Vince McMahon, blah, 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 blah. Tell the other guys and the wrestler guys and the manager guys. And now it's the same thing. They have to walk you and give you this pass, and, you know, and then you feel stupid standing there because it's like you want.
It's similar with the parks as well.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If I wanted to go see, like, the executive staff for Epcot, which is the park I work at, I go into reception, say, "Hey, I want to see so and so." They go, "Well, let me give you a call," and they come up, and the whole. Pick you up, take you back to their office, and the whole time it's, shh, okay, we gotta talk too loud in the hallways. It's like, this is annoying. I won't talk. I talk normal. I don't want to whisper if you're walking ahead of me.
Right.
If you hear me. So, you know, it's almost a joke. You know, that's why I loved with Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. how everything's all segregated. You know, what level are you? Now, unfortunately, with Disney, it is almost that.
Level 7 access.
cool. Right, all right.
It's
weird. It's almost like everyone's afraid of getting noticed. Like, they'll be fine next if they hear you over, you know, speaking about, like, hey, what about these color correct? Like, shh.
Well, we joked when they changed our IDs. As a full-timer, hourly, I used to have a yellow ID. Now it's blue. Which was the same color as managers. And we joked, oh, we all got blue. Everyone's now blue IDs in case someone goes insane, goes postal or comical.
Okay.
They don't know who the managers are now safe because you now don't know who's a manager and who's not if they're in plain clothes.
You flip like that. So if you hear the gunshots, hey, I'm yellow, bro. And I'm just, whoop. Just flip that. I'm out of there, bro.
Right. I find
it's weird. So to get in there, you'd have to, like, schedule some kind of, they may have, if you have a podcast and you say, I want to do a little thing where we're promoting, you know, and I want to interview a couple of guys, they might schedule some time in the conference room and then they bring in an editor too. But you'd, like, it's not just something where, it's not simple for me. Like, I don't go up there unless I have a reason to, or specifically I'm going to meet up with Joe Quesada to go get, like, lunch, and he's in L.A. half the time, you know, working on a lot of stuff. So it's
right. For me, it's not up there to do interviews. It's more, I'm one of those people. Haunted Mansion is my favorite ride at Magic Kingdom.
Okay,
and I've seen it with the lights on, and to me, the magic's still just as great with the lights on as it is with the lights off. I'm one of those guys who Star Wars Blu-ray. My in-laws got it for me for Christmas, the nine-disc version.
Nine-disc version?
It was six movies.
Oh, okay, all right. I thought it was like, how many boxes, how many behind-the-scenes can you have?
A lot.
There are 40 hours worth of bonus material across three Blu-rays.
I think I got to get that now.
That's the first thing I watched was that bonus material. It's like, right. I've seen the movies plenty of time. I want the bonus material. And it's the same way with, when we picked up Iron Man, the movie. First thing I went to, it's like, I've seen the movie. I want to see the bonus materials. My in-laws know, they get me the, if they have a choice between the standard version or the two disc or three disc.
Let me get you.
Pay the extra money, get the widescreen with the bonus material.
I like the ones where they revisit it so many years later. Like the Iron Man one, like the movie was just made. So like bonus materials kind of like, okay, it's cool to see maybe they're making the suit and stuff like that. But like recently I watched a Conan the Barbarian with that. you can almost practically hear as on the, this year's guy find the sword. You can almost hear the beers like cracking.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a good scene there.
I can't remember if it's Conan. Maybe Conan and I heard somebody talking about it where it's like that's all he did. It was like, oh yeah, I did this. Like he's basically describing exactly what you're seeing.
I fell down there, and John Miley said, "Don't worry about it. That is temporary. Forever, my man." You know.
I think he did it on Total Recall too. This is why she had the three movies.
I just get quattro. I didn't know without this shirt. You know. But it's just like it almost sounds like they're as they're doing it, like they had a few before they did it, you know. Funny stuff, man.
So great. We thank you, Nelson, for coming on the show, having a great time with us, causing us to have a record show for lengthwise for Marty and I. Usually it's an hour, but hey, two and a half hours is awesome.
Do you get me talking? See that? Me and my big mouth. That's it.
But you know, it's great. That's what makes a great show. And of course, we are going to have you back again because there's so many more stories to tell.
I'll bring some people. I'll get Frank Thierry in here with me, and then
then
you'll hear us cracking the beer over here.
It was fun at MegaCon talking to him briefly about Riddler and just how, because I'm a huge Riddler fan.
Oh, yeah?
I think Riddler is one of the most underrated, underused villains out there.
He's
one of the greatest.
Right?
But, so we thank you for coming on, and
we'll get to bed. You guys probably have to be up early, so
this is like a giant size issue.
All right.
So
let me check out the Megadroid page, and I will talk to you guys soon. Let me know when you want to do this again. We're gonna have some fun.
Cool. On that note, Marty, you got anything?
I got nothing.
Then on that note, Leia, you know what to say.
Give the evacuation code signal.
I will bring you back a snowball.
All right, cut the chatter.
This ship will self-destruct in 20 seconds. This is your last chance to push the cancellation button.
It's over, Kai. Adventure. Excellent.
Why did my pick the blue pill?
I wouldn't trust this overgrown pile of microchips any further than I could throw it.
Hold it. Hold it. I said hold it. By the way, why are we wearing bras on our heads?
Ceremony.
Clark, I don't like the look of this neighborhood.
Come on, Ellen. It's important for the kids to witness the flight of the rebellion. Kids, you noticing all this flight? Roll them up.
We Be Geeks, your voice of the geek revolution.
This has been a We Be Geeks production.
The new sound of Sorcerer Radio. Version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app, version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better. Stronger, faster,
streaming Disney music 24/7. app highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next.
Hot dog!
Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
No cookies!
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Pardon the interruption. I have some news which I believe you will find most interesting.
Would you like to hear the latest in Marvel television, film, and comic book news? Are you looking for some suggestions, someone to pick up on New Comic Book Day? Well, join Mike and Ken every Saturday night at 8 p.m. on Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio, your source for all things Marvel.
There is a matter that requires your attention.
Mighty Marvel Geeks, assemble!
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Introducing Rebel Force Radio,
your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary
with Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
Rebel Force Radio.
You are on the front lines of fandom by listening to this show.
Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank usher in a new era of Star Wars podcasting.
Rebel Force Radio.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Stay tuned for special announcements about the Rebel Force Radio official webpage.
Leaving no Star Wars fan behind.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Check out the pop culture podcast that everyone is talking about. Follow the show on Twitter at Well Watchers. Listen to the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and thewellwatchers.com.